Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoy it. If you're enjoying Pirate Living Podcasts and all the content we bring to you each week, you can support us and buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/pirateliving.
Other ways you can show your support as well: subscribe and follow Pirate Living Podcast, rate and review our show, and share this podcast with your friends.
You can find us on Instagram at Pirate Living Podcast to keep up with the latest episodes, awesome guests, and bonus clips.
Pop in and say hi. We love chatting with fellow pirates. You can also reach out to us to learn more about our individual and group coaching programs. And as usual, keep creating good trouble. And now, on to today's episode.
Ahoy, mateys. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Pirate Living Podcast. Today, we are revisiting our second episode with guest and pirate queen Alex Barker. Alex is a leader in the Be More Pirate community and another big inspiration to our pirate-themed podcast. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned. We'll be back with a new episode next week.
Welcome to Pirate Living Podcast. We are your hosts, Karan and Kristen. On this podcast, we are highlighting ordinary people living extraordinary lives. These are pirates who take small, bold actions daily to create social change. Pirate life is all about rebelling and breaking the rules for good. Creating lasting social change starts by first breaking our inner rules. After all, the hardest rules to break are your own. The pirates we highlight have dedicated themselves to creating good trouble.
Today on our podcast, we are talking with Alex Barker, Pirate Queen. Alex is the community leader of Be More Pirate and co-author of How to Be More Pirate. She guides people to starting their own pirate rebellions. Alex is all about breaking the rules to create real change. She disrupts the status quo in order to get people to create real movement. Alex is here to guide you on how you can be more pirate. So, Alex, we're thrilled to have you here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. As a modern, or as a leader of the modern day pirate movement, will you lay out the tale for us of what led you along your own pirate journey, and how did you get involved with the Be More Pirate movement?
Yeah. How far back do you want me to go?
Oh, as early as you want.
We've got time.
Well, I do want to start before what I like to call, the point where I went to sleep for a while. So I think the moment when I really started to think about the way that the world worked, which is, you know, the systems that we operate within, the status quo, what is it, was when I was really at university and I switched from studying literature to studying politics. And I specifically did, you know, what we call here international relations or global affairs. And I, you know, was very much schooled in sort of neoliberalism, like neoliberal thought and the kind of standard theories that you get taught studying international politics. And I kind of remember thinking they didn't make a lot of sense to me necessarily. I didn't have the confidence, but I didn't have the authority to question the textbooks that I was given or the tutors that I had or anything like that. I just remember thinking I had different ideas. But I ended up falling into studying Middle East politics, which is a bit of a baptism of fire for political thought, especially as it was during the Iraq War and everything. And at the end of the course, I went to the Middle East for a while, just because, which sounds scarier than perhaps it was. At that point, it was pre the Syrian war, and it was actually quite a well-trodden backpacker trail you could go on if you went around like Jordan and Lebanon and Syria and parts of Israel and Egypt and Palestine. And it was actually a lot of fun. And I was always quite adventurous. So I just wanted to do something a bit daring or different. And but I also really, really wanted to try to understand the country from I guess the people's perspective. That's always been something that's interested me, that I didn't quite take for granted what I was being taught through theory, and through, you know, yeah, through the textbooks and what I'd learned at university. So I really wanted to go and, you know, just see with my own eyes. I think that that sense of experience is so important in learning. Although at the time I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just like, oh, just go on this trip and have fun and, you know, not get a job because I didn't want to. So, but also it was also to do with the financial crisis at the time. It was 2009. I came out of university and it didn't really feel like I had much of a shot at getting a job anyway. So I thought, you know, at least I can add something different to my CV. But what it did really was with all that traveling and looking at the world and actually getting quite close to some of the conflict, whether that was a good or bad move at the time, I don't really know. But it, I came back and I thought, I really want to work in international development. I want to do something that is going to help solve some of these problems that I'm seeing. I started to understand in more depth inequality, because I think in my course, I'd studied it from a theoretical point of view, but now I'm starting to get into some of the, you know, people who were talking, critiquing the system. Mm. And so I worked for a campaigning organization called Global Citizen when they were just setting up in the UK. And we did some really, really interesting campaigns. I remember reading a book called Half the Sky, which was all about gender inequality. And it, but it was all stories. This is another thing that really fascinated me, because I had this background in literature. I was the coming at the problem through storytelling. I just thought, this is the key. This is how you get people on board with solving problems and tackling the system, challenging the status quo. So I was really like pumped up when I was about 23. I was like, yeah, I'm going to change everything. Even though I didn't quite know like what my skills were, what I could possibly add to this, pretty much nothing at the time. I just kind of got involved. But I guess over a couple of years, I got a bit worn down by finding it very hard to get consistent paid work. I tangled myself in knots about the complexity of it all. And I felt very overwhelmed by how bad certain things were. Like when I really looked into some of the problems around things like trade inequalities and why poor countries were being kept poor. Mm. I just felt like miserable, actually. I felt like, how am I gonna, what role could I possibly play? What could I possibly do here? What impact could I have? I'm just a, you know, young girl. I don't know anything. And, you know, eventually I got a job in a charity that I thought was good, and it was good enough. And I thought, well, at least I'll stick within the charity sector and I'll try and do something and I'll try and learn some skills. And, but in truth, I probably just went to sleep a bit. I think I got too overwhelmed by the scale of the problem. Mm. And thought, I'll just try and live my life comfortably. But the thing is, you can't really kill your own desire or passion, I think, or interest in something. It just dulled for a while. And so it was always kind of like dormant. And I ended up just going through the motions for a long time. Yes, I did learn some really, really valuable skills in my job. And I'm grateful for that. I became a communications manager. And so I learned a lot. You know, I was still interested in communication as a core to making change. But I just didn't quite know what I was doing with it. Like, I didn't think anything I was doing was really having any impact on anything. And I just got to a breaking point around 2018, in both in my personal life and in my professional life, where I just thought, what the hell am I doing? Really, like, I couldn't, if I go on any further like this, I'm gonna get sick. Like, I think I'm gonna become depressed. And so I had to just take like some big risks, or what would be considered, I didn't think that they were that risky, actually. I think internally I knew, like, this isn't actually the risk. The risk is staying where I am. Mm-hmm. But to the outside world, to perhaps people who were close to me, I felt like it felt as though I was changing everything at once, and that mm-hmm. was volatile. But I went off and I took a break from my job. I didn't even quit it straight out, to be honest, although I had it in mind that I wouldn't go back. I just took a break. I went traveling again. I took myself off to the Far East alone. And just thought, I'll figure it out. and I left my relationship, and I did figure it out, and I came across Be More Pirates. Well, I downloaded it as one of the many books I downloaded on my Kindle, and I just thought, well, probably this seems like something I need to be more pirate. I remembered seeing Sam come to talk, because where I worked, we would have authors come and talk about their new ideas all the time. And I mean, I remember him coming, but not paying much attention to it because I was so brain dead from everything. And then picking it up and realizing it was going to be about social change, and feeling that I just couldn't handle that at the moment. I was like, I need something to help me before I think I can help the world in any way, shape or form. I need to pick myself back up. And so I sort of discarded it for a moment. And then it was when I saw a job advert for a right-hand pirate that I came back to it. Because at that point I'd already started working for another author, kind of by chance, or again, serendipity that kind of came in and at the right time. And so I almost had this, could see this new path emerging. And then this other author came up with an almost similar job, but much more in line with my previous work and my interests and desires. I thought, I just remember I was on a transit bus at an airport in Vietnam and just being like, this is the thing, this is what I'm going to do next. Like I just can feel it, just need to follow it. And then that was the entry point. I did a job application, went back to interview with Sam, kind of just knew, I was like, I'm going to get this, I can feel it, like I know exactly what to say, I know exactly where he's going to go wrong or not go wrong, because I'd run a network and I'd seen how to run a network in a social change environment and how the organization constricts the potential. So I was like, if we have autonomy and we have flexibility and we have openness and we're more human with people and we engage on a real level rather than just pretending that we have the answers, which we didn't, then we can open up their potential. And then we're going to have a crew of like autonomous pirates. And that could be great. And that will bring about social real change. I this is a long story, but yeah, Sam said, I've just received all these messages from people all over the world who've taken to my book, Be More Pirate. I'm at a personal crossroads as well. I don't quite know what to do with it. I need help. And can you find out what they're doing and what does it mean to be pirate? Other than what I theoretically wrote in my book. So that's what the brief was, to talk to people about how they'd applied their principles in Be More Pirate and what was really working and what wasn't, what rules were being broken. And that's where I took it from there and started to build out a network and a community and dig into their stories. And that's been the journey to the second book and all kinds of adventures.
It's really interesting. We just recently had a conversation, and something that you said is very similar to something that a conversation we've had with another guest. The fact that when you first got that book, you weren't receptive to it, or even when the first time you talked to Sam, you didn't hear the message. We talked about that in the context of the book, The Women Who Run with Wolves, and how, for the first time picking that up, it was, I'm not sure I'm into this until the moment was right to hear the message of that book. And then it really hit home and was a powerful message. What do you think was the change that made you receptive to finally hearing the message of Be More Pirate, and what clicked in you at that moment?
So that's a really good question. And that's something I've heard a lot from other people as well. I, in fact, had a conversation with a woman the other day who said, I picked up Be More Pirate 2 years ago. And I thought, ugh, I don't want this. And then some recently over lockdown, she got given it in a cab by a cab driver. And he was like, you got to read this. And she read it again. She was like, whoa. Anyway, for me, it was, I mean, if I'm honest, yeah, wasn't receptive to it. It wasn't that the messages in the book didn't mean anything. It was that I was put off by the branding and the cover because I felt that it was marketing over substance. Mm. I just seen too many authors put forward an idea and not follow it through. So I think for me, the reason the message clicked when I could see the reality of it, when I could see how much it worked for other people rather than for myself. I mean, there's been lots of moments for me personally over the last 2 years. It actually grows every single day where I see the layers in Be More Pirate that I didn't see before. Mm-hmm. Around permission and what permission really means deep down. So I definitely wasn't ready at the time to hear all of that. And I love that it's such a process. Mm-hmm. It's just that there were lots of people who responded to the book who were at that moment, and it was seeing them become so alive through the narrative, through the this kind of avatar of pirate, that just made me, it's what allowed me to get on board, because I had was done with theory, theoretical ideas about change. I just needed to see something that really enabled people to act. And it's funny because you think, I thought of it before, like, oh, people need a framework, or not even a framework, like they need a method, like a steps to follow. Be More Pirate isn't like that. It's a story, really. It's a story mm-hmm. that, I guess gives people permission that, It's a mindset unlocker more than anything. there were lots of moments in workshops I did with Sam, listening to Sam speak, talking to him about it. There have been many epiphanies that, again, a lot of them went into the second book for me, that helped me to understand specifics about why it worked, around why having a general code is better than having detailed rules, for example, or what it really means to be at the edges of the map and what that does to your mindset and things like that. And things like around power, like I'm still massively exploring that subject of power. And, you know, I don't think you can just structurally redistribute power. Like, you can in an organization, you can say, I'm no longer the CEO, I don't have complete control, you are all free now. But people have got to feel free. And that's a different piece of work to do. So, yeah, so there's, I don't think there's one particular moment that was the catalyst. It's just lots and it's ongoing. Hmm.
So when you took the position working with Sam, did you still have doubts about whether Be More Pirate was more branding over substance? Or how did you reconcile those doubts to start working with him?
No, I didn't. I can't explain this, but I had a very, very strong gut feeling that this was not, that whatever it was, I was meant to do something with it. I really can't explain it other than that. I challenged Sam to make sure that A, he was somebody I could work with and was going to be sincere about it, because written down some of the things that he had suggested about where we should take it contradicted my ideas about where we should take it. Like, I was very, very clear that this had to be about real relationships. If you're going to ask me to form a network, I'm not just going to create you a newsletter and a load of outputs and grow it meaninglessly, because if it doesn't connect with people, mm-hmm. It's kind of meaningless. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it was so clear that it would connect with people once you actually read the book. And I mean, it was funny because even in the interview, he didn't have, when I asked him directly, like, who are your community as you see it at this stage? And he said, I don't really know. I didn't even know who I was going to be working with, really.
Yeah.
But the idea was powerful and I could see the storytelling value in it. And I think, like I said, I love storytelling. I love seeing social change through storytelling. And that had been so missing in the work that I'd done previously. I'd spent 5 or so years working alongside social entrepreneurs as part of my previous job and helping them. You know, I'd edited maybe hundreds of blogs about projects. And I noticed that people found it very difficult to tell a good story about the work they were doing. They could be incredible at delivering the work, mm-hmm. but drawing out the most, like, you know, weaponizing the story, as we'd say, drawing out the most powerful, impactful, authentic, real, human, relatable parts of their story, and then speaking about it was just very challenging. And I didn't feel like I had free rein there to do that either. Things had to be sort of structured or framed in a particular way. So, you know, the fact that this was so bold in how it told the story, I think really appealed to me on some level. I just wanted to make sure that that there was going to be some substance, but I kind of knew I'd have to find that out anyway, that it was worth trying to find out. So at the point of joining Sam, I was like, this is going to be worth the journey regardless. I think that was my overriding thought.
No, for me, when I started reading the book, I was living the corporate life as a teacher, like on the way bottom end of the totem pole too, like a childcare provider are way lower even than school teachers. So for me, coming in that corporate world, like that, the book was helping to give me a voice within this situation of like, I am this person that is so far at the bottom. I feel like I have minimal voice. When I started to read the book, it did start lending some of that space to have that voice, and also reining in, because for me, I'm like, I want to take on the Department of Education and bring them down, and then realizing, no, you have to start small, like to make the changes, you've got to start, you can't, going for the big thing is only going to tire you out, instead of starting with what are the small actions I can take here to start working toward that change. So in that too, the we've done a workshop with you where you've talked about creating a pirate code. So what would you recommend for our listeners to do to create their own pirate code?
Yeah. I mean, a pirate code encompasses, I think, two things, really. First, you've got to understand your sense of identity, like your beliefs. I'd say desires and beliefs. Some people might say values. I think Sam, in the book, original book, uses, you know, what would you stand up and fight for? That can be a useful question to ask yourself. Some people find that too big a question, I think, to start with. But I'd say, you know, unlocking the permission to want what you actually want is something that I notice if we're talking about it as an individual, I notice so much restriction and limitation around who you actually want to be when you sit back and think about it. You know, we've usually boxed ourselves into what we think is realistic for us based on all of our, you know, legacy and conditioning and all that. And then also, you know, what do we really believe in? Like, what do we believe to be true about the world? And then from there, you can kind of start to fashion out what's meaningful to you, what's important. There are lots of different questions I think you can ask to unlock that. Some people like to go a bit harder and be like, what would I make sacrifices for here? And whereas sometimes, you know, just asking about desires and beliefs is simpler. So that's kind of the starting point. And then, you know, the whole point of a code is about closing the gap between our intention or our kind of core values and our actions, because most of us don't live in accordance to what we actually want, believe or desire or value. So it's like looking at those things, well, how is this actually being threaded through my life? Is it? And what would I maybe need to change to do that? You know, I'm speaking now about it as on an individual level, but, you know, doing it in teams, it's about getting people together to discuss as a group, well, what actually is important to here? What actually is important to us here? How have we lost our way? Because every single organization that I work with identifies a gap between what they say they value, the rhetoric, and the reality. And that is, in that gap, there is a hell of a lot of misery, dissatisfaction, and so much potential, so much wasted potential. So, you know, that can be simple things like, you know, we say we prioritize this, but actually we spend all of our time over here, wasting our time with our meetings. And so the first step is, you know, getting it down to those small, bold actions and simple things. Let's cut out a day of meetings, or make sure that that's free, or give everyone 20% of time. And quite often it has been those simple bureaucratic actions or letting go of something that has been the first step. And sometimes it's been you know, much more ambitious. It really depends on where you are on your pirate journey. Mm-hmm. And everyone is somewhere different. So I always say that this is a very personal, I can't give you a formula for this. I can give you questions to ask and a kind of, you can figure out your compass, but I can't tell you exactly what to do here, because it's going to be personal based on your parameters for risk and your parameters for change and tolerance for it. So yeah, but starting, you know, I think especially for women, which I've been doing a bit of work on recently, is about letting yourself accept what you really want and owning what you believe in without tempering it, without trying to give caveats and apologize and constrict yourself. And sometimes you have to do that on your own first, mm-hmm. before you can even think about maybe telling someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the things, like Kristen and I, our pirate journey was so similar. I think that's one of the things that brought us together. We both, you know, last year and the beginning of this pandemic, and we're in a lockdown, we both had these corporate jobs and we're making money, and we both quit. Independently of, you know, we didn't talk about it, it was just something that both happened so that we could go on and do what we really wanted to do, because we realized these corporate jobs that we were doing were just, they were just soul sucking, right? They were just not fulfilling. And it's really interesting that we both gave ourselves that permission at the same time. And I think that's one of the things that really brought us together, is the parallels of our pirate journey, and which is really cool to have someone to share it with, even though you're going through it alone. If that makes mm-hmm. sense. And I imagine, is that the point of the Be More Pirate community, or what is the goal in creating that, the community movement?
Yeah, I think that solidarity is a big goal. I would like that the, I think, yeah, I believe that relationships are an end in themselves. I think finding one or two people who to sort of change the world with is critical, if that's what your goal is. I would like the community to do something to change the world. If I'm honest about my own ambitions for it, I have to sometimes remind Sam of this, when we talk about it, I'm like, you know, social movements take time. They take years in the making to really develop. And you know, I think that lots of the people in our crew do change things on a day-to-day basis and have impact all the time. Would I like to see us do something that is more systemic change? Then yes, I would eventually. But so I suppose in my mind, back of my mind, that's kind of my goal. I would like them to get enough groundswell to do something that is recognizable to perhaps more people who've never heard of pirates. But in the meantime, it definitely provides community and solidarity and a sense of, being able to, a crew to talk to about that process of what permission am I going to give myself to, what am I going to quit? I mean, a lot of the people in our pirate crew have quit jobs, and some, you know, we always refer to it as like, oh, they're still in the Navy, or they're free now. You know, it happens all the time. People sort of take the leap and then go back in. And we have a constant conversation as well about the benefits of working within the system to a degree, and how actually, rather than piracy being about out and out rebellion, it's actually sometimes about bridging the gap between an old and new paradigm, particularly when it comes to thinking about ways of working together. Like piracy, as you guys know, is networked, it's agile, it's dynamic, it's autonomous, you know, people have agency, we have democracy, and that is pretty much non-existent in most organizations. So demonstrating it, there's a new way, in such a way that the people who are stuck in the old way can see it and hear it and respond to it, it's very challenging. You have to kind of bring people along. So you kind of have to be pirate, but not too pirate that no one hears you, because that isn't actually that useful. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean you're not being a pirate, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. So that is a purpose of our community to me as well. I don't want to just leave everybody behind who's still working within a system, let's say the system, you could call that education, healthcare, all the systems, or business models that aren't working as well. So yeah, I think that's a big purpose of it, to be able to be a bridge to a newer and better way, through how you show up.
How do you recommend the people in the system that feel so stuck in the mud, but, and they're wanting to see that change? How do you recommend for them to take those actions of being more pirate, helping to create the change, but maybe they're also at the bottom of the rung, like CEO's way up here. And so they're the lower people and they want to see this change. What are some actions that you recommend that they can do within the system?
I'd say that there's two ways that I usually recommend. I had this conversation with someone the other day who works at KPMG, who is sort of fairly low down the rung, and was complaining about the way that things are, the culture. And I just said, well, have you ever talked to anyone else about your frustrations? If you're feeling them, no doubt someone else in your team is, or other people are. And he's like, no, haven't done that. I was like, well, that's the first step, is to just sound out some other people, you know, with the view to slowly forming a small group, an insurgency group. I think that's forming strong relationships with other people who share your views. Ideally your views, but not your background necessarily. Like, it's always beneficial to try and reach out to people who are quite, maybe coming from quite different to you, but might even share your frustrations amplified. So crew is one way, just to start having the conversations, like, and be as open and as vulnerable as you can tolerate, because that's the only way you're going to build any real trust. If you just go in and without sharing anything of yourself, they're not going to share back and you're not going to build it. The other thing, again, I'm sure you guys probably know, I would recommend is the small bold action point, where you identify something you could do, and even if you're not very senior, something that is outside of what you would usually do. That's why I would call it bold. It doesn't have to be so bold that you feel that anything big is at stake. That's really crucial. The second you start to feel that it might veer into anxiety, don't do that. Because it's all about understanding momentum, and you have to pick something that will, if it succeeds, will really be exciting for you. If it doesn't succeed, you might feel a bit flat or a bit like rejected or a bit defeated, but you can handle that. That's okay. But you don't want it to like massively impact your sense of security at this stage, I'd say, because we're talking about starting points. So that could be something like just emailing a senior person who you've never spoken to before, but you kind of like know that they're influential in some way. And if you made that connection with them and they responded to your idea, that could be the start of something. I mean, Sam and I went in and did a workshop on this a couple of years ago at Penguin, his publishers, with a group of interns. And we were like, you know, what are you guys doing about building relationships with people who you're a bit afraid of? And they were like, nothing. And then we're like, come on then, like, let's do that. And then we also got them to think about the crew idea. It was like, are you guys meeting every week outside of the office to talk about the experience that you're having here as a group of interns? And they were like, no. I was like, get out of the office, go somewhere interesting, talk to each other, share the knowledge, because you'll be stronger that way. So I think those are the two starting points to do if you feel that you're stuck in the mud. And there's lots of variations on small bold actions, you know. That's something you have to decide for yourself. I use just the example of emailing someone because that's just been a very common thing, a point of having a conversation, and something that people find a bit scary, but isn't likely to have any lasting bad consequences.
Yeah. What are some of the bigger pitfalls you've may have come across or witnessed in people trying to create their rebellion? What are some of the common mistakes?
Yeah, number one, doing it alone. It really is. It's happened a couple of weeks ago. One of the pirates in the crew said, went into a big space where they were the lone person trying to challenge, and just felt so deflated and burnt out, and started questioning themselves so much from it. And I said, why didn't you bring in one of us or some of the others into it with you? And they're just like, oh, I just thought it, just didn't think about it. And so I think, not doing it alone is a big pitfall. I think that when it comes to asking difficult questions and challenging, if you do it reactively, as in you've built up your level of frustration, you seize the moment in the meeting and decide to be pirate, or whatever confrontation it might be in a family situation or something, and you challenge without any preparation, without any prior thought, then you can fall pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then you lose all your momentum because you think, well, being pirate didn't work. Mm-hmm. But how you challenge is so critical. There are constructive and constructive ways to voice your argument and your the expression of your frustration, your challenge to somebody. So actually practicing that, like using the crew idea of as a sounding board, is something that I've seen other crews do, and I think is really vital. And I say, that same goes for just an individual trying to express. I see this all the time in workshops. Whether it's expressing a challenge, a difficult question, or a basic belief about what is happening here, like what are the rules, or what are the rules that I want to break? If it's the first time it's ever come out of your mouth, chances are you're going to be really unsure about how you say it. And so taking the time to go over that with someone else and say, how does it sound when it's like this? Or is there a different way I could phrase this? And it sounds so simple, but I definitely see that as a pitfall, because the second you lose your confidence in what you're saying, you lose confidence almost in the idea, and the idea of being able to challenge anything.
Yeah, we all have a common coach, Mark England. Yeah. And with the Unlifted program, one of the things he drills into us is we need to draft and then craft. Right? Your first draft of anything, whether that be a school assignment or your pirate rebellion, if handling in that first draft, it's not ready yet, right? And then you get to take time to craft it and perfect it and then practice it. And that's why we love walk and talks, practicing your speech. What do you want to say when you're on a walk? Because walking is integration, as Mark would say. So I love that you this is mirrored in Be More Pirate and creating your rebellion is, the first draft is not necessarily your best work. You craft your message.
Yeah. And that's why, joining Unlifted and becoming part of this community was so appropriate. Because yeah. I kind of started to see all this happening anyway. That is a huge part of the pirate mentality, and helping people to become okay with that. I think if you're going to talk about a pitfall as well, our attachment to perfectionism, particularly in the, I don't know how it is in the US, but in the UK, like in the way that you're schooled to almost always produce perfect outcomes first time, and that being repeated through in people's careers. Mm-hmm. It's switching to the mentality of constant drafting and experimentation, and kind of enjoying the failure because you're learning something. I found that really hard. That's been a big part of my inner pirate work. But I see it with other people a lot of the time. It's accepting that this is the only way, I think.
And one thing too with, like, yes, there's just taking those small, bold actions. And then there's also that realization of this starts with you, because nobody's going to come and rescue you out of this situation. If you want things to change, whatever rebellion you want to create, you need to create within yourself first. So yeah, for with that as well, like for you, what rebellion did you have to create in yourself in order to become more pirate?
The biggest rebellion for me has been becoming not a workaholic. I really, really, it's really interesting. It's been, and COVID has helped a lot. It's been a process. And I definitely wasn't out of it in the first year of doing Be More Pirate at all. In fact, I was almost compounding it. But while I was doing the material and learning at the same time, knowing internally that there was this kind of dissonance happening within me, where I was like, I'm talking about this stuff over here and I'm not practicing it over here. And knowing that it had to change at some point, but not knowing at what point it would. And when the pandemic hit, I think I was like, wow. This is kind of great. Because for me, what that really meant was an understanding that I had been trying to like beat a failing system. I had been trying to optimize myself so much when the system itself, when I say the system, I mean all the norms around work, around how long you should work, for how long, that the feeling that and I mean this in a genuine bodily felt sensation, that I had gotten to the point where when I wasn't working, I didn't feel good. And when I was working, I did feel good in my body, which has meant that I almost couldn't enjoy leisure time properly. Mm. And that is not good. But it had been, you know, a system of reward and punishment over so many years that I, through a whole host of different people and situations, that it's hard to decondition yourself. It's hard to unlearn it. It just takes time. And so I even notice it, you know, sometimes now when I'm not working within 9 to 5 hours, I feel like a sense of like pressure, even though I have absolutely no reason to do it. I can set my own hours. I know that I don't have, you know, my work is freelance, so I work when I work, and then when I'm not, I can do other things. But it's just so, it's really an emotion, like an emotionally conditioned thing. I can't explain it, or a body thing. So not sure if that's the most coherent explanation, but it's definitely the inner permission that I have to give myself all the time to keep explaining to myself everything you've been taught about how work should work isn't necessarily true. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it this way. You don't have to work for this long. You don't have to, you also crucially don't have to dislike your work. Like that. Genuinely, like when I don't have a set amount of boring admin tasks in my week, I start to feel a bit edgy, like I haven't really done anything. It's bizarre. And it's I just realize it's just a case of being taught that way for a very, very long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an expectation around productivity. And when we're not productive, then that can produce anxiety, because then it's like, well, what is my worth here if I'm not producing something? And I totally understand that. And I know, even for myself, it's almost worse as an entrepreneur, because now I'm like, well, if I don't work, no one's going to work on this business, right? Versus like when, you know, it wasn't a corporate job or in the Navy, there's always someone else to pick up a shift or to pick up the slack or what have you. So it can amplify and I identify with what you're saying, because that's the lesson that I'm learning right now. And it was, you know, for me, it was my partner and almost a forced day off on Sundays so that I can be with him and the family. And at first that was a lot of anxiety producing. I'm like, you know how much stuff I could do on a Sunday? I mean, especially now Kristen and I have, you know, four podcasts to get through. But yeah, it's an interesting thing to put down that constant need for productivity.
But I think it was also stepping properly into the entrepreneurial space that made me do it as well, because I thought I could just keep going forever. Yeah. There's no end to my job now. It's all on me and there's no end. So mm-hmm. this could have been a really bad path mm-hmm. if I didn't take stock. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it was the pirate idea that let me really understand that I could question all of the norms and the rules that I'd grown up with, and I could give myself permission to do it entirely differently. And that was honestly just radical. I can't you on that the epiphany moment, like that was radical for me. And you know, it also comes, it's not just from school, it's my parents are insanely productive, like the most productive people. Mm-hmm. And I love them dearly and they're like the best parents ever, but I have to acknowledge that, and they acknowledge this too, that they've drilled in a sense of slight anxiety around when you're not productive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. We did some story work around that, right? Like, what do you learn about this from your mother? What do you learn about this from your father? What do you learn about money, right? And it's interesting that those money stories can be related back to our parents and how, you know, you have to work hard and, you know, multiple jobs in order to earn the money that earning a living has to be hard mm-hmm. is yeah. what it boils down to. And to yeah. break that story that it doesn't have to be hard, earning money can be, or earning a living can be fun. That's novel. How many people have fun at their jobs? It's interesting to combine like what you're talking about with just story work and what we do with the Unlifted stuff, right? Yeah. Has there been, because I know that you've done some of the Unlifted and some of the story work, has there been a pivotal story that you've worked through that's kind of related to being more pirate that you care to share with us?
If I'm honest with you, I haven't worked through anything to do with Be More Pirate mm. so much, because I'm relatively clear on, I think, I mean, I worked through some of the work stuff that I've just mm-hmm. sort of explained. The things that I have, okay, so I'm not going to share the whole story because it's a bit personal.
Yeah.
For here, but I definitely did work through some story work on why I found it difficult to maybe step into the limelight a bit mm. around talking about it, because now, you know, because I do podcasts like this, and mm-hmm. it was quite an unusual jump for me to go from being an employee, a relatively non-important employee in an organization mm. to working for an author who had a certain level of, you know, gravitas and attention. Mm-hmm. And then to suddenly find yourself kind of moving into that space a bit more without really knowing how to own it mm-hmm. Or feeling that you didn't necessarily deserve it. So that was some story work to work through. Where did that come from? At what point did I identified moments where, at what point did I stop wanting to be in the line, like what happened around that, and mm-hmm. there was some stuff. So that was really interesting. That was a real click moment to think about why that happened mm. and how I can let go of it. So yeah, that's been a part of the journey. But yeah, I don't want to go into in too much depth.
Yeah. Oh, we know how personal that story work can get.
Deep.
So in a nutshell, can you just tell us what does it mean to you to be more pirate? It's a pretty general question, but
I think being more pirate in essence is about giving yourself permission. We often use pirates as a proxy word for permission, because I think it does boil down to that. The mindset is probably the most important part of it. And I've just used so much soft language there. Acknowledged. It is the most important part, because without that, you don't go on to do things, the rebellion, the crew building, all of the essential steps that come later, building your code, venturing off the edges of the map, making real change, comes first from within. I do believe that. And, you know, it depends on how deep you want to go. But it starts with permission.
One of the things I really loved that you talked about, and I say talked about because I'm listening to it on audiobook, and How to Be More Pirate, which is the second book, is the difference between, you know, having a compass and having a map. Will you kind of explain what the difference of that is for our listeners, the difference between having a map and following a compass?
Yes. That sort of relates to the idea of the code. And we, I guess, in mainstream and conventional planning, we like to have a map. We like to identify ourselves at point A and try to get to point B and actually look at what is in between. You know, if you think about a map, you've got usually a road, several roads, options, and you can see what's there along the way. But life is not like that. We don't know along the way most of the time. We can make a plan perhaps, and I think this is kind of where we fall into a trap. We imagine that it will be 5 years, this job, 2 years later, this marriage, etc., etc. And for some people it works out like that, but for so many of us it doesn't. A compass is something different to navigate by. That is about identifying a lot of that stuff I said at the beginning around who am I? Knowing that more than beyond the status points that you've been given or you've inherited from your class background, your race, your religion, your gender. Get rid of all that. Like, who am I? What do I want? Again, what do I believe in? What's valuable to me here? What drives me? And be really honest about that. And then you form your compass, like the points that you can come back to if you start to veer off track. So I genuinely did this to add a bit to the origin story of how I got here. I remember sitting in the British Library, which is the biggest library in London. And I used to go there all the time when I was at university. It's quite a nice space to work in. And you can just drift in there and work in free. And I was at the point when I was really on the cusp of quitting everything. And I was like, well, if I don't want this, I don't want this domestic life that I've built up for myself with my comfortable job and my comfortable relationship and flat, what the hell do I want? Like, genuinely, like, what is it? And the first word I wrote down was adventure. That's just what came to mind. And then I tried to break it down a bit more. I was like, what do I mean by adventure? I mean excitement. I mean learning. I mean connections and serendipity. Like, that's what it would feel like to me. And that's what I want back in my life so desperately. And that was a compass, weirdly. It did help me to navigate the next steps. I could see the opportunities more clearly because I could match them to the conditions that I wanted. So I made the choices about the jobs that I took and what I was looking for on that basis, rather than going, oh, I should aim for a job in this industry because that's the industry that I've come from. or I should go for this job title because that's a step up from where I was. I just ignored all of that and I looked at the conditions that I was trying to create in my life. And I think that's the idea of a compass as opposed to a map. Mm. And I had, there was a really nice moment in one of the, in the code workshop we did with all the coaches last week, where we talked about the, you know, if you think of yourself in the present and you've got the future laid out for you, and ideally the future is totally unknown territory, it's all uncertain, and that's okay if you've got your compass. However, the past is mapped, and that's the problem, mm-hmm. because that's where all the stories are. They're too mapped out. And the guy I think it was Mike in the workshop who said this, he goes, and we've got, but the great thing is that they are mapped, and we just need to start putting pins on the map to identify places we've been. Mm. And once we know the pins, we can start to unpin them. I was like, that's such a brilliant imagery for this work. It was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of like being more pirate and part of doing the story work, they go so well hand in hand, because on both of them, you're looking to rewrite those stories to create a grand adventure of my life. Like, I get to be the author of my life. I get to push the boundaries and go to the edges of the map, go slay some dragons and create that adventure. And that's exciting. And I love that you are promoting that in the community and helping people, supporting them with getting started on their adventures.
Mm. Yeah, one of the things I try to say when I'm working again with businesses, you know, I ultimately would like them to use their, you know, create their own rules, rewrite their own rules. But if I ask myself honestly, like, what is my agenda here? Where do I think we should be going with the mutinies that we're inciting in organizations? You know, I don't think that business is fit for purpose for the 21st century. I want business to become regenerative. And I mean that for people and for planet. Mm. So I don't think we can get to a regenerative business for planet if we don't tackle the people stuff as well. So people have to feel, you know, that they want to be there and that they're doing something good and feel purposeful. I don't know where I was going with this now. Completely lost my train of thought. It was late. What were you just saying, Kristen?
Creating adventures.
That's what I was going to say. Is that I think that in creating regenerative businesses, rather than them looking at that like, oh my god, like how are we going to create profit whilst also becoming carbon neutral, and you know, those are the kind of challenges that come up, and they say we can't possibly change how we do things like quickly because it will affect this and it will affect this and all that. And I appreciate that difficult decisions have to be made if you let go of orthodoxies, but it's also exciting. It's supposed, you know, what if you could be the pioneer here? Like, what if there's a doorway that's just opening, and why is it that you feel that your team lack the creativity, the imagination, the intelligence to take this challenge on? If you focused on that, made it your priority, and decided we are going to be the pioneers here, that I think is an adventure that people should go on. I think so. Again, I think they just need to be given permission and be given a bit of a kick. And we've seen that happen. We've seen that happen with Be More Pirate, that it has opened that doorway. Doesn't always work, but that's how I definitely see it, as a sort of double-edged sword. As like there is fear, one of the books that I started reading over Christmas, or I read over Christmas just as I was starting the Enlifted work, was a book called Playing Big by Tara Moore. I don't know if you've heard of that. She talks quite a bit about language, but she also, I'd never heard this before, but she describes that there are two words for fear in Hebrew. Mm. And I'm not going to repeat them because I can't remember them exactly. I'll mispronounce them. But the point is that there's kind of lizard brain fear that is the biological urge to protect yourself, which is, you know, the kind of tiger coming to get you. But there's also this other kind of fear, or at least in this in Hebrew, the language, they identify it as a separate thing, which is when you are in a space of expanding, which I thought was a really nice, like, description of what I see and explain to people in the workshops about what the edge of the map space is. It's not total anxiety, all-consuming death trap fear. It's expansion fear, and you should be trying to be there often.
Yeah, that was actually my next question. What does it mean to be at the edge of the map?
It means to be in the unknown, really in the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And try to get comfortable with it. Like, if you're not in the unknown, you're in the known, mm-hmm. and therefore you're not doing anything new or potentially exciting, I think. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, there are degrees to which you can do that. You don't have to be unknown about absolutely everything. You could be unknown about one thing, you know, if you're talking about a project. So you don't have to, cross over into that anxiety fear. But this is the whole point about innovation. And, you know, we get hired to do workshops around innovation, and people love that word. And it used to just, one of the pirates always says to me, she's like, innovation porn. Like, when they just roll out this whole program about innovation, knowing full well that nobody wants to get uncomfortable and nobody wants to be in the unknown. Mm-hmm. But it has to be about discovery, because if you're not discovering, and then, you know, I also hear people sort of saying, oh, we want to be the next Steve Jobs. And I'm like, Steve Jobs sat in his bloody garage, quit his job, quit university. Like, he was in the unknown. He was very much in the unknown for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, to give an example of a classic innovator. And then, you know, Apple became the Navy. But and that's how the cycle works, you know, of change. But yeah, that's really what it means to me. Being willing to feel your way through the dark.
Mm. Love that. Oh, I was just saying, I love that. It looked like, Karan, you had a question.
Nope.
Well, then our question is, yeah, thank you, Alex, for all of this. First, where can the listeners go to find out more about you? And then also in that, like, is there anything we can do to support you?
So you can find everything about Be More Pirate on bemorepirate.com. We're on Instagram at Be More Pirate, Twitter at Be More Pirate. They're the only social media channels we actually maintain. And we have just released our podcast. So I think that's the kind of the thing that I'm keen on promoting at the moment, or sharing with people. Because it's just sort of out, and we're interviewing more people that we think are pirate. Today, actually, we recorded a new episode with two incredible guys who are really, really innovating in healthcare, but are very pirate about it. Like, their attitude is just spot on. And, you know, over here in the UK, it is a big, like, our National Health Service is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal before the pandemic, but it even more so now. It's been underfunded for many, many years by our current and former governments, and yet it's kind of a national treasure, but it's also a bit kind of, there's a lot of, let's say, slightly meaningless management going on. And so a combination of bureaucratic divisions, hierarchy, and, you know, lots of rules. It's a very interesting place for pirates. And these guys have just smashed out the water. Some of the stuff that they've achieved through the pandemic is quite remarkable. And I'm really happy to kind of share their story through our podcast. So that's something I'd love to, to sort of share with through other networks. You know, there's on the website, I've kind of got a little map of our community. There's like more and more people adding themselves every day. I have no idea where some of the people come from, which is amazing. We hold like regular meetups. Should anyone ever want to drop in and just like come and chat to some pirates. The next one we're doing is on the 18th of May, which will be, we're doing a new series of like little debates around different provocations. So to do with work mainly. So it's like some of the stuff that we think about at work that we think is a given, like getting someone to argue for and someone against, and then like looking at the different perspectives on it to, yeah, kind of create some conversation. So the first one is going to be purpose at work is a con. Mm. We've got like some people who really believe that purpose is the core of everything, and some who think it's all purpose washing bullshit. So that's fun. So yes, there's like lots of fun stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. That is a lot of things, and I'm excited to listen to the podcast too.
Yeah, it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
It's super lovely to talk to you guys.
You too. Before we let you go, one important question, Alex. Do you know any good pirate jokes?
Oh God, there's loads. There's so many pirate jokes.
If you don't have, go ahead.
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Okay, we always have one in hand just in case. So, why does it take pirates so long to learn the alphabet?
Something to do with R, maybe.
No, yeah. Because they can spend years at sea.
Oh, that's really good. Really good. Yeah. I think I've zoned out of like the pirate puns and things.
We're just getting started.
So cheesy.
But yes. Starting the pirate living. I'm so happy that I just literally love it when some people take on board the pirate brand so much, like, and it becomes part of their brand. Mm-hmm. People, what's so funny is people always ask me, like, oh, don't you worry about people stealing the ideas? And I'm like, oh my God. Please steal the ideas. That's the whole purpose of this. Like, take it and run with it and become your own brand of pirate. Great. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And more, you know, that is the goal. That's another goal of the community. Just reinvent pirates as your own.
Mm-hmm. It's the pirate way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we become like a really strong fleet. Mm-hmm. Or international criminal organization. Maybe not criminal, but, you know, international movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, thanks again for hanging with us, especially it's late for you, so thank you for giving us your time.
Pleasure. I feel like there's probably a million other things I would have wanted to say, but
we'll just have to have you on again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've got loads of things in the pipeline we're going to develop, and just hoping over the next year or so to build up a bit more resource within Be More Pirate to help, get some help. I want to do like a retreat, like I say a retreat, no, like a like a residential type thing where we do different types of workshops over a long weekend or a week. Yeah, there's just loads of stuff that I want to work on. So,
yeah. Well, hopefully we can travel to join you.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
One day.
Pirate Festival.
Yes.
That'd be so good. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. And we'll be tuning into your podcast as well. And can't wait to hear more.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Pirate Living Podcast. We really enjoyed our conversation with today's guest and hope you enjoyed it too. If you are enjoying Pirate Living Podcast and all the content we bring to you each week, one way you can support us is to buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/pirateliving.
There are other ways you can show your support as well. Subscribe and follow Pirate Living Podcast, rate and review our show, and share this podcast with your friends.
You can find us on Instagram at Pirate Living Podcast to keep up with the latest episodes, awesome guests, and bonus clips.
Pop in and say hi. We love chatting with fellow pirates. You can also reach out to us to learn more about our individual and group coaching programs.
Ask Karan about her online nutrition programs and in-person programs she's creating for teens. For the little pirates in your life, check out my, Kristen's, Abracadabra books and my Wins Journal on Amazon. And check out Language Ninjas on Instagram. You can also check out our pirate merch at our online pirate shop or on TeePublic. The links to these are in the show notes, so check there.
And as usual, keep creating good trouble.